If you'll open your Bibles to the book of Genesis, you may want to open in 25. We're going to back up and do a little bit of a review before we get to the passage that Holland just read for us about this stairway to heaven. Now, if you remember in the story in 25, Jacob had been revealed earlier as the son of promise, and then God began to work to make that a reality. Jacob would be the one through whom the promise of all nations being blessed would come. Esau, because he despised his birthright, became the father of the nation known as the Edomites. It's interesting because if you track the lineage of the Edomites, the most notable person among the Edomites later on would be King Herod and the family of the Herods. Later on, though, the Edomites were completely destroyed. God had prophesied that they would no longer be a nation, and that prophecy came true. Today, there are many Jews on the face of this earth, the descendants of Jacob. There are no Edomites. So the blessing went through Jacob. Now, Jacob was given a name that at that time was not the greatest of names. It was a name that carried with it a little bit of a negative connotation. And they gave him that name because when he and his twin brother was born, he was holding on to the heel of his brother in the birth process. So the name that was given him literally means one who grasps. And it became sort of a name that was idiomatic, that carried negative ideas. It came to mean one who is a deceiver, one who is a land grabber, one who is a usurper, a shyster, or a cheat. Now, with that meaning, you would wonder, why do parents still name their children Jacob? Well, the reason why is because of who this man grew to be. Jacob grew to be one who is worthy of serving as a namesake today, because through trials, through his wrestling with God, he came to be a man of great faith. And really, isn't that the story in many of our own lives? Many of us have had false starts. We've made mistakes along the way, but through the patience and the mercy and the grace of God, we today are what we are by his grace. And that was certainly the case with Jacob. Now, the first evidence, though, that Jacob would bear some of the connotation negatively of that name that was given him was seen here in chapter 25, the story that we've already looked at about him preparing some stew, and then his brother comes in. Esau had been hunting. He was starving to death, and Jacob took advantage of his brother, but his brother also let go of something that was precious in exchanging his birthright for a mess of pottage. Jacob gave him the soup. Esau gave Jacob his birthright. And it's amazing how folks today continue to act just like Esau did on that occasion, trading something of great value for that which is worthless. For a one-night fling, a man will throw away a marriage to a faithful wife of 20 years, relationship with his family, his reputation, just for one night. A parent will be glued to a television show and will fail to give up something as worthless as that for a few moments of priceless time with a child who desperately needs that parent. We continue to act like Esau. Esau was foolish, but Jacob was devious. Now, Jacob showed his colors again when it came time for the final blessing. And in these days, that blessing was a significant thing. And when Isaac grew old, he grew blind, he grew infirm, and it was time for his passing. And so he wanted his boys to come in, and he was prepared to give them this patriarchal blessing. Well, he asked Esau to go out, go hunting, bring him in some venison, prepare him his favorite meal, and then he would provide Esau that patriarchal blessing. And he intended to give the greatest blessing to the son Esau. Well, Jacob and Esau's mother was a devious person herself, Rebecca. And so she talked her son Jacob into dressing up like his brother. She got some of Esau's clothes. She got animal skins. He put those on his arms and around his neck so when the father hugged him, he would think that it was his hairy son Esau. And they tricked old blind Isaac into giving the blessing that had been reserved for Esau instead to Jacob. You know, it's ironic that Jacob again uses stew to cheat his brother out of what was rightfully his. He took in a bowl of stew for old blind Isaac, and he said, "It's Esau, come back from the hunt, and here's your venison stew." And Isaac was confused. He said, "It doesn't sound like Esau, but come close." He said, "You feel like Esau, and you smell like Esau." And so he placed his hands on Jacob, the wrong son, and gave him the blessing. And when Esau returns home and finds out that he has twice now been cheated, the first time it was not anything but his own foolishness, but now he had been cheated outright from the blessing of his father. And so Rebecca knows what she's done and the animosity that she has helped create between her children. So look, if you will, in chapter 27 down in verse 42. 27:42. When Rebecca was told what her older son Esau had said, and he was ready to take his brother's life, she sent for her younger son Jacob and said to him, "Your brother Esau is consoling himself with the thought of killing you. Now then, my son, do what I say. Flee at once to my brother Laban in Haran. Stay with him for a while until your brother's fury subsides. When your brother is no longer angry with you and forgets what you did to him, I'll send word for you to come back from there. Why should I lose both of you in one day?" Then Rebekah said to Isaac, "I'm disgusted with living because of these Hittite women." You see, Esau had taken two wives from among the Hittites. Now, suddenly she feigns this disgust with his wives. She said, "If Jacob takes a wife from among the women of this land, from Hittite women like these, my life will not be worth living." And so she goes a roundabout way to provide a reason that Jacob should go back to Haran and find a wife from among her own people. Have any of you ever gone in the back door to get what you wanted because you couldn't be honest and upfront about your real intentions? That's what she's doing. Again, it's devious, it's deceit. And you look at the story and you begin to learn that Jacob learned deceit from his mother. You know, it's amazing how these traits, for good or for ill, can be passed down from one generation to the next. One of the things that that we have to do when we become Christians is we have to do an evaluation. And there are some chains at times that we must break. Just because your parents did it this way doesn't mean that God wants you to do it the same way. And there has to be a godly evaluation. And sometimes we break those chains and then we pass on a positive example to future generations. It's tragic that through the scheming of Rebecca, that deceit was passed on to Jacob, and it became almost a lifelong habit for that boy. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 20-25, Paul wrote, "Therefore each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to his neighbor." And that is especially our responsibility within our families and as modeled before our children. So Jacob followed his mother's advice. He packs his bag in the night, and off he goes to escape the wrath of his brother. And he's headed back around miles away, back to the homeland from which his mother came, back to an uncle that he didn't even know. and it was his first time away from home. Jacob had been the pampered favorite of Rebekah. He loved to stay among the tents while his brother went out and hunted, and he had been petted and pampered all of his life. And I can imagine what it must have been like as he began this solo journey back to this foreign land. It wasn't nearly as comfortable as life back at home. His bed was on the open ground out in the wilderness alone. His pillow was a stone. He had traded the comfort of a bed of blankets for a bed of rock. And I just wonder how he felt out there as he was far from the comforts of home, far from his family, leaving a familiar world for one that was unfamiliar. And it must have been a frightening prospect as he lay out there alone under the stars. And as often happens when our sleep is disturbed, he began to dream. And he had this vivid dream. And the dream that he dreamed was of a stairway that led from the earth up, up, up into the clouds and into heaven itself. In chapter 28, we read about that dream. Look in verse 10 of chapter 28. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord. And he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. And when Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place! This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Boy, what a wonderful dream. Instead of a nightmare, he had the best dream he'd ever had in his life. He lay there, and as he slept, he saw this stairway, but it was unlike any stairway he had ever seen before, because this one was an entrance into heaven itself, and the angels of God were walking down to the earth and then again going back up into heaven itself. And it was accompanied by a promise from the Lord Himself. Jacob had heard about these promises. He had heard from his grandfather Abraham how God had appeared to him and had made that promise of a land and of a great nation and of some future unknown blessing that would bless every corner of the earth. Isaac had received that same promise from God, and he had heard that story, but it had never happened to him until tonight. And on this night, he hears the very same promise that had been given to his grandfather Abraham, to his father Isaac. And look at his response. He immediately recognizes and realizes the presence of God. When he went to bed that night, he thought he was far from his family. He thought God must have been thousands of miles away. After all, look what Jacob had done. He had twice now cheated his brother. He had lied. He had fooled his old father. Have you ever felt like that? Have you ever done something that made you feel like you were so far from God that God couldn't even hear your prayers had you shouted them? And yet, that night, God reveals to him a truth that is present and a reality for every sinner that this world has ever known. Jacob put it in these words, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it." God was right there all along. As Jacob left home traveling, God was right beside him, and he didn't even know it. That night, as he lay his head on the stone, surrounded by darkness, little did he realize that God was right there with him, right at his side. And the important thing for us to know in this is that it was not because Jacob was good. Jacob had been unfaithful. Jacob had cheated. Jacob had lied. Jacob had done his father a terrible wrong, his brother a terrible wrong. And now he's running for his life. And it was at that point that God shows Jacob his presence. Now, some people say you can't find grace in the Old Testament. That is not true. There is no greater picture of the grace of God than this one, where God, because of God's goodness. Why did God do that? One reason. He loved that boy. He loved Jacob. In spite of all of his mistakes, God loved him. And let me tell you, there is nothing that any one of you can do that will stop God loving you. And God is with you. And God is right there with you, even when you don't feel it, even when you don't know it. For one reason, He loves you. He loves you. And He will always show Himself faithful. It doesn't matter how unfaithful you are, God will not change His character. His love is there, His faithfulness is there, and He'll always be there waiting and ready for you to turn and respond to Him. In Acts chapter 17, Paul spoke to a group of pagans about God's creation as he was attempting to lead them to Christ. And there in Acts 17, Paul said, "God did this." And he talks about God's working in our world. "God did this so that men would seek Him and perhaps reach out for Him and find Him, though He is not far from each one of us." Paul could say that to a group of pagans that had never even heard of Jesus. God's not far from every one of you. He's right there. He wants to be seen. He wants to be discovered. He wants to be responded to. And this morning, I don't care who you are or where you've been or what you've done, God is close enough to you at this very moment to reach out and touch. And as we have worshiped this morning, I hope that as Christians who have seen God and experienced God, I hope that we have felt the closeness of God in our worship today. And I hope that we can leave with those very words, "Surely the Lord is in this place." Well, what did that dream mean? You know, throughout the Old Testament especially, we read about dreams, and they almost always require an interpreter. Joseph was a great interpreter of dreams. Daniel was an interpreter of dreams. What did that dream mean? What could that have meant, that there's a stairway and angels are going up and down that stairway? It's interesting because here in the text, we're not told the interpretation of the dream. In fact, it's not until we get to the New Testament story of Jesus in the early days of His ministry that we read of another reference to this story of Jacob and his dream and the stairway to heaven. So I want you to turn over there to the book of John in the New Testament, John chapter 1. There in John chapter 1, Jesus was in the process of selecting His apostles. And we read about His encounter with a very pious man who was a man of great integrity. There in chapter 1 of John, down in verse 43, it says, "The next day Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. Finding Philip, He said to him, 'Follow Me.' Philip, like Andrew and Peter, was from the town of Bethsaida. Philip found Nathanael and told him, 'We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph.' Nazareth? Can anything good come from there? Nathanael asked. Come and see, said Philip. When Jesus saw Nathanael approaching, he said of him, Here is a true Israelite, in whom there is nothing false. Now, Israel was the name of Jacob. That was his name. And he uses this as a play on words. If we could have heard it in the original language, we could have understood. He's talking about Jacob, whose name was Israel. And Jacob had that connotation of deceit and deceiver. And so Jesus is saying, here's a deceiver who has no deceit in him. Here's a shyster who is a man of integrity. And so he makes this word play with Nathanael. And Nathanael immediately is intrigued and he asks Jesus, How do you know me? And Jesus answered, I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you. I don't know what he was doing under that fig tree. Perhaps he was praying. Maybe he was making some promise to God. But something significant had taken place spiritually in the life of Nathanael. In a place of isolation where no one could have seen him and no one could have known. And now Jesus says, You're a man of integrity. How do you know that? Because I saw you. I know what went on under that fig tree. And the hair stood up on the back of his neck. And he thought, How in the world could this man know what went on between me and my God under that fig tree? Then Philip declared, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. And Jesus said, You believe because I told you that I saw you under the fig tree. You shall see greater things than that. And now he makes reference to the dream of Jacob. Look what he says in verse 51. Then he added, I tell you the truth. You shall see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending. He said, You're going to see the same thing that deceiver saw. You're an Israelite in whom there is no guile or deceit. And you're going to see greater things. But Jesus added one more little bit of information that was not in the dream of Jacob. Did you see it? I didn't read it, but it's there. The very last of verse 51. He says, You're going to see heaven open, the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. Not on those stairs. You will see heaven open. And the way to heaven is not going to be some stairway made out of stone. It's going to be the very Son of God, none other than that. Remember what Jesus said? I am the way and the truth. No one comes to the Father except through me. Jesus is the ladder to heaven. Jesus is the stairway to heaven. He is the way. He's the access between heaven and earth. Now the angels, you know, what about them? What are they representing? Well, we know clearly that angels praise God, but we're also told clearly in the New Testament, in the book of Hebrews 1:14, there that all angels are ministering spirits sent to serve those who will inherit salvation. Jesus provides the way. The angels are God's servants to bless us and help us as we go through the one way of Jesus to heaven. Jesus provides that bridge that allows God's resources to be administered to believers through angels. Now, I don't know how, but the Bible says that that's what happens. Jacob got a sneak preview in that dream of that mysterious blessing that would one day come to all of his descendants. Here he was in the middle of nowhere, in that place that he would later call Bethel, the house of God. It had originally been called Luz in that area. Luz simply means a desert place. Well, it wasn't a desert place at all because God was there. And from that desert location where that pillow of stone was set up by Jacob, and oil was poured over it, and he worshipped God there. From that location, eventually the blessing came, and it has gone out into the four corners of this world. He got a little bit of a preview of what was going to happen. when I was a boy, I was about 5 years old, and I witnessed the baptism of my parents. It was in a little church building in Texas, West Texas, and my parents had been studying with the preacher, and it was at night, and I remember being rousted out, and we went across the street to the church building. We lived just across from it, and we went upstairs. The baptistry was one of those high ones up behind the pulpit, and I stood up there as a little boy and watched my mother first and then my dad go down into the water, and the preacher who'd been studying with them baptized both of them. I was young, but I still have vivid memories of that. It was that same building, that same baptistry, that some years later, as I grew up as a teenager, that I made my profession of faith. My brother did too. And our whole family right there in that congregation. You know, in many ways, that is where I was nurtured in my faith. That's where I found the Lord, or rather where the Lord found me. Jacob wasn't looking for the Lord. It was only His grace and mercy that allowed him to be found by God. And I know many of you have been nurtured in your faith in this congregation. There have been many here who've been baptized right behind me in this baptistry. I don't know where it was that the Lord found you, your Bethel, your place where you knew that the Lord was with you and that He loved you. But if you've never discovered that, if you have never allowed God to hold you and demonstrate His love to you, He longs to do that. And all He's waiting for is for you to say yes, to make that relationship a reality. If you need to come this morning, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.